And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer for the program, and we have a wonderful program lined up for you today. We're going to be celebrating a very important anniversary, 30th anniversary of Mac Group Detroit. It's the largest user group in the Midwest for Mac users, and we've got a very special group of people in here. We're also going to be saying goodbye to a dear friend of ours who's coming in here, and Kirsten Thomas will be with us to talk about security. Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, co-host of the program here, and we have a full house. But there's somebody very special we want to take a quick moment to say goodbye to, because the swallows from San Juan Capistrano arriving at a certain time, they leave at a certain time as well. And Dean, I don't know if the analogy is appropriate, but we wanted to make sure we said goodbye to you, Dr. Dean Krauskopf, who's the host of the WJR Gardening Show just before us.
You know, I think that's the first time I've been compared to a swallow.
I've been compared to a lot of other things.
But I didn't want to pull out the dead leaves falling or anything like that.
Let's just drop that whole train of thought.
But we wanted to do this. I want to let people know that who have enjoyed your show this spring and summer, that they can still stay in touch with your good advice. How do they do that?
Well, the conversation continues, but we're going to do it by email or on the website. So it's wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And I will maintain that through the end of September, you know, when everything's basically over and done with. And just the normal people will, like you do, Internet Advisor people, right, and talk, email me. Mm-hmm. I will respond, and I'll post it right back. I probably will not be able to directly email back to people. I just can't do that, but I will post my comments right on the website.
So everybody gets to enjoy the good news.
The neat thing about gardening, especially in this area, because the environment and what have you, if one person's having a problem, many people are having
a problem.
Right. So go ahead, Kim.
I was just going to say, and regardless of whether you're going to be in a lighthouse or wherever you are, you'll be able to do that, right?
You know, that's the amazing thing about the web. It's still in awe of what can be done. And yeah, anywhere we go, you can keep in touch. Sometimes I'd like to not do that, but, you know, we go there. But through the end of September, that website will be live.
How long have you been doing this, that you've been doing the seasonal program?
I think this is either 25 or 26 years. Wow. I'm getting to the age where I just kind of gloss over anniversaries.
So we got a bit of running to do, Gary, to catch up.
Yes, we do.
So, Dean, when do you start up for the next season? Like if after September's over, of course, you know, you don't have anything to do, but if I want to send an email, like, you know, before you come back so I can prep my garden, where would I send it to the same place and get the same result?
The idea is that I tell people that I want to come back as late in April or even into May as possible. And the reason for that, of course, is MSU went to the Final Four.
That's true.
Yes. And I am, as all of you know here, I am an MSU sports fan, bleed green and white. So if we're in the Final Four, I am just ecstatic. So usually a week or two after the basketball season ends, that's when they bring me back.
And Dean, you know I'm going to be joining you this year.
I congratulate you, Gary.
So my son is heading up to MSU next Saturday.
I have a grandson headed up that same direction. Yeah, the same engineering program.
I know how difficult it is.
Okay, well, we'll have to introduce them.
Yep.
That'll be great.
I know how difficult it was for you to say that, Gary.
You know what? I shouldn't say this on the radio. He never listens, so I won't. But I went out and bought a MSU hat. So I'm going to be wearing some green and white.
And they haven't ran you out of Ann Arbor yet?
Not yet. They didn't know about it till just now. Hopefully nobody's listening.
Well, if we hear a protest on your street in front of your house, we know what it's all about.
There you go.
Will you be involved, by the way, in the filming of the
The Lighthouse movie that I know your wife has been involved in, we've been talking
well,
about
Well, we've been married for a lot longer than I've been on the air, so yes, I will be involved. I have that was no pretty, choice.
That was pretty evident when we had you both on to talk about that, you know, that movie. It sounds like it's really kicking off well.
Everything, we start shooting the first week in October, and it'll be, I think, a 15-day shoot.
Mm. Yeah.
And then all the post-production stuff happens, but that 15 days is going to be intense.
It's called Lighthouse Unmanned.
Lighthouse Unmanned. It is the story of when the name comes from when the Coast Guard knows that there's nobody at the lighthouse,
right,
because they were first responders, just like
right,
Coast Guard.
Right.
That's their terminology, Lighthouse Unmanned. So they know there's no one there to do rescues. And it's about...
Oh, about the rescues. Yeah, that's
and
a
it's,
key point.
Again, part of the movie is about honoring these brave men and women. Interestingly enough, and Michigan has a long history of women lighthouse keepers.
Yeah. You know, I know it's not just rescue either. There's times when it's really important for the lighthouse keeper to be able to communicate back. I'm reminded of a story of a Laker captain who saw a light off in the distance in the evening in the dark and basically radioed ahead and said, "Hey, I'm a big Laker, you know, give way." And the response was, "I'm a lighthouse. You give way."
Right. I think that's all he had to say. I'm a lighthouse.
Yeah.
The interesting thing was, and it's still today, the concern is that with these big ships and even the smaller ships, we have all the GPS, we have all these fantastic navigational aids. Until the batteries die, something goes wrong with the electronics, and then what happens? And that's why there's a lot of us, I'm in that group, that say we need to really think about these not only as historical structures with that history behind them, but also still aids to navigation that could play a vital role here on the Great Lakes.
Right, exactly. Well, Dean, thank you so much for your service to this WJR audience and for thousands of listeners who have heard you on your podcasts and who enjoy you on the line as well. Give that web address again, one more time.
It's wjr.com/The Gardening Show, or just get into WJR.com, and it's with you and all the rest of us weekend experts. You can look into that, and I'm down there in the middle someplace.
Well, enjoy your fall, and the very best to you and Sharma, your wife, and the filming of that exciting episode coming up, or the film, I should say. I'm looking forward in the spring, and when the spring thaw comes, to finding out what's come up with that. Dr. Dean Krausgaup, the host of The Gardening Show here on WJR. Back in just a minute. We're going to have a party here. We're going to be celebrating the 30th anniversary of Mack Group Detroit. You know, there's a very dangerous thing going on in the studio here right now. Gary and Cal are sharing the same mic. So
that tells you how many people we have here in the studio that are our guests today. It's a wonderful big crowd, not only to celebrate the anniversary of the Mack Group, but to celebrate your 70th birthday, and we have cake. Folks, we have cake, and you'll be able to eat virtual cake if you go to our website and see the photos.
So. We don't have candles because we couldn't find a fireman.
That's true.
Well, the kids, when they celebrated last Saturday, we celebrated as a family, and they gave, instead of giving me candles, they gave me these like two...
Sparklers.
A 7 and a 0, so they didn't want me to, you know, pass out trying to blow out 70 candles. And today, what I wanted to do, a couple of things. Gary, we have somebody very special we hope to be meeting quite more often than just one time here. And that's somebody that you've run into just recently who was very much involved in security. And he is Kasten Thomas, and we're going to be talking with him a little later on in the program after we talk with Cal and a whole bunch of guests that we have in studio here in the first and in the second hour as well. But why don't you introduce Kasten, since you have gotten to know him?
Well, I am going to borrow his way of describing the way we met and then inject my two cents as well. He said, you know, 20 years we kind of crossed paths but never directly met. And then he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and we met earlier this year. And Kasten, I describe you as the guy that knows the most I've ever of everybody that I've known in the security industry, you know the most about the new technology, some of the cutting edge kind of technologies. And I find it fascinating every time I talk to you. So I'm sure that as we get to your segment here a little later in the show, that our listening audience will do the same.
We're delighted to have you. Go step up to the microphone there, and I think you press the one
button right there.
There you go. Right, there you are.
There we go. Yeah. I guess that proves I'm not that great of a technologist.
No. It wasn't a security measure to keep you off the air.
That's right.
We're delighted to have you in here. Some of the things we want to talk about with you a little later on in the program will be things like, are passwords passé? Is there a kind of a magic security squeak out there that people ought to be flocking to buy? Because in the past, you know, we would do things like zone alarm for the firewalls and, oh, it'd be malware bytes for, you know, the...
Malware.
There you go. Yeah, there malware. You go.
And your favorite, Norton Security.
Oh, Norton Security. But I understand nowadays that's kind of passing as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about that with you. I just kind of... Quickly, you deal with businesses, I imagine, and primarily, right?
Primarily large businesses, yes.
What is their greatest concern? Well, we've had people in here talking about thousands of attacks daily on businesses.
Sure.
What is their biggest vulnerability, if you will?
The biggest vulnerability, I don't know that that's their biggest concern. Their biggest concern is, what do they not know about?
Right. Oh, yeah.
It's not how many you block, it's how many you don't block, right?
Right. And it takes over 100 days on average between the time that a hacker has penetrated a corporate network or a government network to the point that it's discovered on average.
Mm.
So that's the biggest risk.
I've often described our biggest security risk is also our biggest asset, and that's our people.
Mm-hmm.
The phishing attacks today, there are so many different ways that con men con women do, but that will somehow get people to click on a link or go to a place where they shouldn't go. And I know that that's a problem. And stealing passwords, which we'll talk about.
Sure. Now, I want to ask you a quick question. This is going to be kind of tying us in with the other theme today, which is the 30th anniversary of Mac Group Detroit. And Cal here is, of course, our man in Mac, and he has got some people in the studio with us. But just a quick jump. Is any one operating system any more secure than another? In other words, is it true that the Mac system is more bulletproof, if you will, than the typical Windows operating system?
Oh, I'm not even going to bite on that.
Oh, nuts. I thought we'd get a little bit of a nibble on that.
Because it's bulletproof today, but there are certainly there are some systems that are less... are less of a target for attacks.
Well, Cal, come on into this, because, Cal, this is one of the things, to be honest with you, when I moved in 2008, I moved over to the Mac system after having trashed a Dell laptop, which was a classic case of my goofs. One of the things that attracted me was that the Mac system was seen as being not as vulnerable.
I think overall it's because the Mac is basically Unix-based, and in relation to the average Windows operating system, at least at that particular time when we talked, the Unix operating system was stronger and a lot harder for you to get into.
Okay, for the majority of people who are listening right now, unicorns and Unix may be the same thing. What is it that makes it so well-armored?
It's just the whole nature of how they wrote the operating system. They wrote it with the Unix operating system was wrote more with security in mind than the Windows operating system was at that particular time. And as it goes on, the Unix operating system is pretty much the underpinnings of the internet itself. And because of that, it required levels of security more than an average operating system.
And the Unix system was developed in the academic community largely. So the sensitivity of having these great academics developing the system went into that as well.
And mostly for academic or business uses, too, not necessarily personal use at that time. And Windows was very porous. It was made to be very open. You could very easily tie into it. And that's what they wanted to do long before they ever thought about security.
Which came first?
Oh, goodness. Unix was developed in the 70s, And
okay.
Certain flavors of it.
Yeah, and the Mac was actually converted to Unix when they bought Steve Jobs' company, the Next Computer, I guess the mid-1990s.
Yeah, mid-90s, I think it was, after he had left Apple. I've always wondered, you know, is, therefore, the Mac system, practically speaking, like, I don't have on my Mac, I have a MacBook Pro that I have here, and it's about 6 years old. About 8 years old now. I have not put any kind of antivirus software on there. Am I foolish? Am I gambling?
I wouldn't tell anybody that.
Right, yeah. We've been through this before. But am I foolish in that?
I don't think you're foolish or gambling with that particular situation. I think part of it is what Gary talks about all the time. Because the Mac operating system is not a target as Windows is, well, you know, obviously if someone's going to exploit something for money, especially, or gain, they're going to go for the biggest possible audience. And so why waste your time writing for an operating system that's going to give you, you know, $1 million when you can write for an operating system malware that's going to give you $30 million? Mm-hmm. So I think that's more the biggest part of it. And then once again, more importantly than anything else, good common sense is probably about the best thing that keeps you from getting any virus anyway, more than any software.
Gary, you had said that before. The people, we're the weakest link in this. We've heard this time and time again with our callers, God bless them, that have said, somebody called up and said they were from, and fill in the blank, it could be Microsoft, the IRS, or whatever. And they said that if I didn't do such and such problems, and I sent them money, and am I safe? No, you're not safe. They can come back and steal from you again. And so it is that personal link. Matter of fact, we had the Alice Award we were going to give off, because Alice was a lady who called in, I think it was last week or before, who had essentially said, get out of here. And I love that, because she didn't sound like, you know, a millennial 20-something kind of person. She had been around for a while. And it was just the good common sense. There's no free lunches. And when these people call up, use your common sense filter, Gary, which we've talked about so many times before. Is it also true that Macs are less vulnerable to some of these malware attacks because you've got one operating system and it's tied to specific hardware, whereas the Windows system is, heaven help us, on God knows how many pieces of different hardware.
You know, I'm going to just cut into this right now because this is going to be fun. I'm going to bring in Dave McGuire because I'd like to ask him this question. I'd like to broach that question to him. So Dave is a member of the Mac group. And I'd like, you know, to get his feedback.
Let's do this, because we're coming right up on a break in just a minute. So, Dave, let's get the answer. We have Dave with us, Dave McGuire. We also have Chuck Friedman, right? Chuck, you're a member. You can, by the way, nodding doesn't work on radio.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, Chuck Friedman.
Thank you very much. And Sheeta Hunter is also with us. Sheeta, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So when we come back, let's tackle this thing, asking whether, you know, Windows by its nature is more porous than the Mac is, and the Macs are, you know, therefore a better, safer place to be. And we'll get into that and some of the other things as we talk with our man in the Mac. That's Mr. Cal Carson. He is also one of the members of the Mac Group Detroit, and they are celebrating 30 years. That's the largest user group in the Midwest or in the country, period? In the Midwest.
Largest Mac user group in the Midwest.
Okay, largest Mac user group in the Midwest. By the way, we have a meeting coming up on Sunday, right?
Yes, we do.
At 3 p.m. We'll talk about that more specifically to celebrate. I plan on being there, by the way. If my wife lets me go.
Well, then you should be there. That'd be a great place for you. And anyone else who wants to come out.
All right. Back in just a minute to celebrate more of the 30 years of the Mac Group Detroit. One of the challenges we face in radio is that when you got a whole lot of voices here, it becomes a little difficult to sort things out. So let me see if I can give you a little breakdown of what we have going on this afternoon here on the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and Gary Baker and Cal Carson, two of my members of the team, are with us in studio here, as well as Cal has invited in a number of people who are part of a group called Mac Group Detroit. And for the almost 18 years that we've been on, we've been talking to and talking about Mac Group Detroit. Certainly it was before, I think, Cal came along as well, wasn't it?
We did, but we didn't have an expert until Cal.
That's right. That's right.
At least expert that was always on the show with us, a co-host.
Yep.
So we got that really added to
who was
our
that
advantages.
Expert?
Well, and the good thing was when we were talking about security, we didn't often talk about the Mac environment because we didn't need to.
Right. And that was the point that we were at just before we broke. Let me just quickly say we also have in studio with us Kasten Thomas. He is a security expert, and his company is InterWorks, and you work with both businesses and many businesses in their security. And we'll because you're going to be chiming in on the conversation as well. I want that. By the way, folks, this program is a 30-year anniversary for the Mac Group Detroit. So we're going to do some special things here. We're going to kind of hang on with this group all the way through our second hour as well. We will start taking your calls at the top of the hour at 800-859-0957. And if you have a call specifically about a Mac, this would be a great time to call in. We have a lot of people in here very, very familiar. But Kasten is going to stick around as well. So if you have a security question and or Windows question, you will be able to get those answered in the second hour, too. Now, I want to step back, Cal, to the question I kind of threw out beforehand. One of the things was, and Kasten, feel free to chime in as well, and as well as our other guests who are in studio here, and they are members of the Mac Group Detroit. We have Sheeta Hunter, who is a technical consultant, right?
Yes.
In your day-to-day, in your work life, what's your position?
In my day-to-day work life, I work with software. I train people on software, whether it be Photoshop, InDesign, Illustrator, Acrobat, and I also do work with clients using the same software, and I teach at Schoolcraft College on those same applications.
Oh, that's great. Great. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And then we have Chuck Friedman. Chuck, how are you doing?
I am doing well, thanks.
And in your life, other than as a superhero, what do you do?
I'm an IBMer. I work for, I'm placed at an ad agency here in the Detroit area. I've been an IBMer for a few years, but I've been in charge of the Mac environment at this agency for about 16 years. Started there in 1998 with about 150 Macs. We have about 850 now locally.
Mm.
I'm kind of the senior Mac guy. We have a decent crew there. And I'm also part of the global team where we have about 50,000 Macs where we'll be managing those globally.
That's interesting.
I just saw an article that people are still concerned that Apple haven't embraced the enterprise yet. But it seems like they have.
Yeah.
So what's going
by
on
sheer numbers.
There? It certainly does appear that Apple is trying hard now to break into that environment because they always had just been consumer-oriented before.
Well, Apple's kind of gone back and forth. At one point, they did have a server. They did have a SAN unit for storage area networking. They did have some server application that you could run on the desktop, and then it disappeared, and then it came back. And to be honest, we really manage the stuff through a system called Casper. I know some don't approve of that program in this room, but that's okay.
Kasten, you warned us beforehand.
He did, and that's okay. I know there's other programs out there that kind of allow us to manage at the global level, to take a single update, manage it, control it, make sure it gets installed on every machine.
Yeah, but it has been a challenge because it's been kind of a fickle relationship in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, connecting to Active Directory has always been a challenge. Apple, which is a global way to get online and or to get your account information and log into the computer, but Apple kind of has changed their methodology for allowing different Active Directory systems. So what works today may not work the next operating system.
Very interesting. So. Certainly a topic for a much deeper discussion that we can handle this afternoon. And Dave McGuire. Dave, thank you very much for joining us from Mac Group Detroit. What's your real life job?
My real life job, I work for Apple Computer.
Oh, sweet.
I'm a technician. I was at the Somerset store for 7 years. And I'm currently at the Partridge Creek location.
I love them both.
For the last 4 years.
They've helped
so
us.
That's what I am currently doing. My previous job, though, was typesetting and printing, which got us into Macintoshes in the first place.
Oh, yes, that's right. Because that was one of the great strengths, Cal, wasn't it? It was the
desktop publishing was the foray. You know, one of the great things that the Mac did best, and I believe that's the reason why Dave was
that involved. And image manipulation, you know, imaging, sheet right that with graphics, right? Were part that's the strength,
or also video,
and video as well. And I think, to be honest with you, I could say the people I know who are editors, of audio editors or do video editing, they are still on the Mac side,
you know. I've always
primarily,
been, I've always believed that there's two worlds out there, and people can correct me. If you wanted to do something creative, you use the Mac. If you wanted to do something in the business, then you use the Windows machine.
But that may be changing, I guess, with the Windows 10 app. We'll get to that in just a minute. I'm getting all sorts of turned around here. But the question, well, or I should say a statement that I made just before the break, and I wanted to have Dave respond to this as the Mac, if you will, tech expert here, is that the reason that the Mac or Macintosh was so safe to use in a growing unsafe world was because the system was bound up to proprietary hardware. That, in other words, Mac made the hardware and they made the software. Whereas with Windows, it could be, they had no control whatsoever. Microsoft had no control until just recently over what hardware this stuff was put on. Is that a fair assumption to make, or is it wrong?
I would agree with you that that's a fair assumption. Being able to have a walled garden, as it used to be called, mm-hmm. has its benefits. If your hardware and your software can work hand in hand cohesively, but on the other side of the coin, when you're looking at the Windows operating system, they're trying to be everything for everyone, and that sometimes leaves doors open.
Yeah.
And people take advantage of that.
Didn't I hear just this week, by the way, that Google announced its own operating system? I don't know if anybody else can confirm that, but that I thought I saw that they were going to be coming up with their own operating system. I'll look up that in between time. But
well, they already have their own Android.
They have Android.
One system that would work across Android and in the other IoT, Internet of Things. Oh, heck, I'll have to look it up. We're trying to find out if it was Google I think it was Google that announced this past week that they had come up with their own operating system. Anyway, let's get back to the, I'm curious about when you became, okay, now Ed is confirming for me. He's in the other studio because we ran out of microphones here. And I'll have to have Ed confirm that when we get back on the air. But I want to talk a little bit about how you all got involved with Mac. Was it something that you were involved in right off the bat? Or was it, Sheila, let's start with you.
All right. For me, it's a very interesting story because my background is architecture. And I worked in an architectural office straight out of high school. And I was more involved with the terminal type of PC, and I really hadn't spent any time on a real, you know, computer. And I did a little AutoCAD, but that was it. And a friend of mine purchased a Mac, and it was one of those little ones that looked just like a little television.
This would have been what, late 90s?
I would like to say it was much sooner than that, but that's all I'm going to say about that. Okay. So,
was this the Apple II? Was that what you're,
that kind of looked like that. Even sooner. The ones that look like a little television.
Oh, the 9-inch.
Yeah, little 9-inch screens.
Oh, so you're really, you were just a kid when you got involved.
I was 5 years old started. And, you know, and actually on those little ones, I actually did AutoCAD drawings on that. So you can imagine that I scrolled for days.
This is about 79. Oh, yeah. 1979 or thereabouts.
We won't even go any there. All right. So how I got involved with this was an associate of mine purchased one, and she was telling me how she was going to do graphics on this thing. And I actually looked at it and laughed. I said out loud, what will this thing ever do for me? And the rest is history. Because a few months later, probably a few weeks later, I bought my own. And I actually spent like 16 hours a day learning it. I had no idea what to do with it. I had a little bottle of Tylenol sitting on the top of it. Because 16 hours a day, I had the biggest headaches in the world. But I learned it. I learned it from the ground up. I taught myself how to use it. So from that point on, I have been a Mac person.
That's interesting. Our next guest here, Chuck, how about you? Now, you said you're an IBMer. What was it that got you involved in Mac?
Well, my first Mac was an Apple II, and I was picking up word processing, some basic programming, and that kind of thing. And as I got through high school and into college, I picked up a Mac, started using it. As I went through, and I actually did work in broadcasting for a while, and Mark Blackwell, the production director here, was somebody who
really?
I had worked with.
Worked with them here, yeah.
Yep, and it brought my laptop in running a program called Sound Edit on my PowerBook, probably 120 at the time. And we digitally edited some music, plugged it into the board, and edited some commercials that way. And that was an interesting way to get things into the board, introduction to him at the time and the engineers at the station we worked with. And I moved into that arena for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And just found, as I was at a user group and asking questions and answering questions for people, a local print owner heard my questions and pulled me aside afterward and said, I need somebody who can run the software and run my place. And a few years later, I'm, you know, doing it not for the same company, but yeah. I'm moved up the food chain and supporting quite a number of people in the industry. So
what was the attraction for you was that it was something that was used well by people in an industry you were getting into. You found an easy tool to use?
It was very easy to use. Yeah. I liked the idea of the graphical user interface on the Mac, which was better. I'd come from an Apple II environment, which was text-based, similar to a lot of the other systems. I had actually taken some WordStar classes with my mom when she was learning how to word process. That was all textual commands and things, and it was just obnoxious with those giant floppy disks. And years later, you know, it's all what you see is what you get on the screen, the old WYSIWYG.
WYSIWYG, that's right. What you see is what you get. Hey, Dave, I want to jump to you before we take our break and find out about when did the magic start for you? Since you're now have you always been involved in Mac?
No, there was about a month time when we bought our first computer at Radio Shack and bought a Tandy and used it for about 3 weeks playing chess, and then it went to the closet.
Oh, my goodness.
And then the company my parents had founded, Huntington Graphics Service, went from CompuGraphic typesetting equipment to Macintoshes.
Mm.
And after that, that's where it went.
So graphic, again, was the avenue that brought you in.
Correct.
That's interesting. Cal, that the specialty that seems to have brought a lot of these people in were the unique kinds of software that functioned well on the Apple platform, and rather than making some sort of a philosophical decision about which was better, the better system to use. How about for you?
Oh, well, I was at work, and we had primarily a Windows shop, and then we had this one Mac in there. And then they had to get 9 more in a printer, and they wanted to network them together. And the guy that was in charge of doing that project asked me to help him out with it. And I said, let me think about it for a while, because I was running mid-range computers at that time. And we had a staff meeting, and the guy and the two guys that were in the shop had to do a presentation on their networks. And there was one Windows guy and there was the Mac guy. And the Windows guy got up and he spoke for 45 minutes, showing pictures and arrows and everything like that. And then the Mac guy got up, he put one slide up, he says, here's my network. It works. It's really boring. Turned off the overhead and sat down. I said, I want to be with him.
Contrarian to the end. Thank you, folks. By the way, we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of Mac Group Detroit today. It's time for us to step aside for just a moment and introduce you to Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor and publisher of MI Tech News. That is a weekly, twice a week now, news gathering of what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan. And Mike, thanks so much for being with us. I understand you're out at the air show, am I right?
Yeah, I went out to Willow Run. My dad was an old Air Force man, so I've always liked to go out and watch the airplanes. It's not so much of a technology play, but I got to tell you that F-22 Raptor, holy cow. I mean, it's amazing the things they were doing with that. It would just stop in the air.
Good grief.
I was flabbergasted. So.
Yeah, and talk about technology. That's pure technology up there now. To the extent, I was reading an article the other day where they're talking about essentially turning it into a drone where there's no pilot in the cockpit, but it's going to be run from the ground, et cetera. It's a fascinating field right now, an incredible one. But we're here to talk about your MI Tech News, which is available on Fridays. People can get the titles then, and also on Wednesdays when you connect people with a lot of the different kind of podcasts that are out there, including ours, IT and the D, and a whole bunch of resources you have. So if you're looking for ways of keeping up with what's going on in technology or into entrepreneurship, Mike's MI Tech News is the one for you. And by the way, it's absolutely free. All you need to do is go to mitechnews.com and put your email address in there, and you'll start receiving these on a regular basis. Mike, let's give people some ideas of what some of the topics are that you handle. Let's see, a couple of the headlines out there. Oh, yeah. An Ann Arbor two-factor security developer called Duo Security published research that illustrates the risk the phishing attacks present to businesses. Now, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that businesses would be as vulnerable as individuals.
Well, people still can be gullible or duped, and in this case, 31% of them that were tested opened the malicious emails during this testing phase out of almost 12,000 people, 400 Whoa. Companies. So a lot more education needs to get done.
Yeah. Yeah, we have, I guess, many
and
of the false.
The downside is a lot higher, too, for businesses. Yeah. They can lose a lot more money and have a lot more problems.
Yeah. Another headline out there, how to snag more followers for your small business on Facebook and Twitter. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that comes from our friends at the Small Business Association of Michigan. Michael Rogers does a really nice job doing interviews, and he interviewed a woman there from Piper and Gold Public Relations, who lays out a lot of things you can do. Because Facebook, Twitter, even a guy like me, I still don't know how to use it as well as I probably should. So if you're in that same category, I would recommend you come to my website, which is, by the way, available 24/7, and click on that link, and then you can find out all these tips.
Now, that's a nice thing about that. You're not only getting news, but it's news that you can use.
And absolutely.
You go to the website and click on that thing, and you'll be able to get more not just more information, but you'll also get some tools to use as well. Let's see. Oh, here's another headline. It's about Auto Nebula, or is it TIE? T-I-E, Auto Nebula, is announcing the Connected Car mobility competition for startups?
Yeah, it's tied in with the TIE-Con Midwest, which is in late October at the Henry in Dearborn. But they're going to be working with a lot of young entrepreneurs, students. There'll be up to six finalists selected. They will be able to pitch. But these are ideas, any sort of areas for applications in transport, vehicle management, traffic management, vehicle logistics, all that jazz. But the nice part about this, as well as winning some money, is you're going to all this beamed back to Silicon Valley. It's going to be shown live in Silicon Valley, where there's a lot of really smart people who, if they see what you're doing and like what you're doing, heck, they could partner with you.
So we've heard folks about security for businesses, about for entrepreneurs, a way of earning some money and also being noticed by Silicon Valley, and some of the other things that are part of MI Tech News. That's on a weekly basis. And I should also mention that Mike and Matt Rausch have a weekly podcast that's aired live on the Podcast Detroit Network on Mondays between 3 and 4, right?
3 and 4.
Okay.
On the podcast, www.podcastdetroit.com. And then, of course, it's available on demand as an MP3 audio file that you can listen to whenever you like.
So there's lots of ways that you can catch the information on MI Tech News. And again, folks, the best part about this and what we really enjoy having, Mike on anytime, but having Mike on to talk about this is that it's a great resource and it's absolutely free. So please take advantage of that. You can either go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page on our homepage, and you'll see Mike's smiling face there. And there's a subscribe button that you can click on. Just put your email address in there and you'll start receiving this information and many more resources as well. All right, Mike, back to the flying and enjoy your afternoon.
Thanks very much. Tomorrow, there's one more day left at the air show. So if you like aviation, there was a reenactment for the Germans and the Americans fighting, all that jazz. So if you're into military stuff and flying, you want to go to the air show tomorrow.
And that's out of Willow Run Airport, right?
Yes.
In Ypsilanti. It's a unique show, a wonderful one to visit as well. Mike, thanks so much, and take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
By the way, folks, let me just kind of wrap up where we are in this hour and say that we're going to continue. This is 30 years we're celebrating with the Mac Group Detroit. So we're going to be continuing into the second hour with none other than our own Cal Carson, the white-haired wonder, who is going to be with us talking about Mac Group Detroit as we go into our second hour. We also have some folks from the group with us. Sheeta Hunter is here, Chuck Friedman, and Dan McGuire as well. And we also have in studio, and he has graciously agreed to stick with us, Kasten Thomas, who is the president of Interworks. And in Interworks, you are, it's interesting with that headline that we were talking about with Mike, you're helping businesses not just get serious about it, but really understand what's at stake and how to deal with the employees that, you know, pick up the thumb drive that has been dropped in the parking lot. I've heard of that one.
Sure.
Or what are some of the other ways that businesses can be made vulnerable by their employees?
Oh, goodness. Ransomware is a big part of it, and phishing. That's probably a bigger target in business than it is for individuals, just because the stakes are higher.
When you say phishing, explain that for the audience.
Phishing is the idea, and it's, if you want to Google it, it's P-H-I-S-H, not phishing as and going fishing.
Which I do and don't catch anything anyway, so it's certainly not mine.
And the idea is that a person who wants to get into the network will send an email with some type of malware or virus or other way to penetrate the computer. And so in doing that, once they gain access to the computer, it's a step away from gaining access to the whole network.
And I heard that that has been taken up a notch with the upper levels to whaling.
Whaling or
spear phishing.
Spear phishing, is that what it is called? Where you go after the CEO.
Absolutely.
And that could be very, very dangerous.
The bad guys go where the money is.
That is the bottom line. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to do the same we always do with our second hour, which is to open it up to your questions at 800-859-0957, 800-859-0957, and we have a whole bunch of people from Mac Group Detroit here to help answer your questions if you're interested particularly in the world of Apple or Macintosh, but they also are very well skilled and versed in the Windows world as well. And we'll be back to take your questions and find out more about Mac Group Detroit and how you can be part of the next 30 years.